Okay.
The camera is up here, and then you see the slide.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this now.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the fifth and last NIST lecture of the spring semester. And for this lecture, we are quite proud actually to introduce a speaker from far, far away, from the great creative environments of San Francisco and thereabouts, to talk about the modern cybersecurity stack. Data-driven networking monitoring with Bro, and in the former Gjøvik University College, and now also NTNU, we have a Bro community, and I know that they have been looking forward to this for a long time, and they have already had good discussions today with Robin Sommer, who is our speaker today. Robin is a senior researcher at the International Computer Science Institute in Berkeley, California, where he leads the team developing Bro, and he's also the CTO of CoreLight, a recent network security startup offering professional Bro solutions to corporations and governmental organizations. And on that brief introduction, I give the floor to you, Robin. Please.
Thank you. Yeah, hello everybody. Can you guys hear me okay? Yeah. Thanks for coming in actually on the day between a holiday and the weekend, I learned. Appreciate it. Yeah, I was very excited to hear that there's a local Bro community here. So I'm happy to talk about more about that. And I figured I wanted to talk about like two themes mainly. And one is the way Bro has really kind of changed how organizations think about securing their networks. I mean, there's a paradigm shift going on from the classical intrusion detection model where you buy this black box from some vendor, put it on the network, and you hope you're safe and it will find the bad stuff, which never happens. Or it doesn't find the interesting stuff, at least. Towards more data-driven network security, where people really want to understand what's going on in the network. They want the data, they want to dig through it, and they want to really kind of gain insight of what's happening in a very customized, very tailored fashion. And Bro happens to be a tool facilitating that very, very well. And the second theme I wanted to talk about is how we as an academic research group at the International Computer Science Institute in Berkeley have benefited a lot from working with operations over time in developing the system. So there was always a back and forth between the academic side, the research side, and people actually using the system over many, many years. And that has contributed to the success of the system we are using seeing these days. And that's something I always like to encourage researchers to kind of aim for, working with people actually wanting to use what you're working on the research side. So I'm actually not going to talk too much about Bro itself. I just want a quick introduction. So Bro is an open source software which monitors your network. So and it works in a classical IDS intrusion detection system setting. So you find some central point of your network where all the traffic comes by. You tap in there, you get a copy of the network stream out, and you send it over to the system. And then Bro starts digging in and just looking at the packets and parsing the protocols and really trying to understand what's going on there. It's not interfering with your network. It's a passive system. It just kind of sits there watching. And in an architectural way, it has two layers. One is the packet processing layer, where really it takes packet by packet, starting to parse protocols, trying to find the key steps of activity in there. So every time there's an HTTP request, it recognizes that, gets out the URL. Every time there's an email, it gets out the email. Every time there's a file transfer, or maybe from your SMB file server, it actually gets to the file, which is being transferred there, and can look if there's anything malicious in that file. By packet processing happens at the lower level of the system. So what's nice and different about Bro is that then it gives you a programming language that sits on top of this packet processing, a domain-specific language. Sometimes I say it's like a Python just for the domain. It's not Python, it's custom own language. But it allows you to program the system specifically the way you want it to analyze your network traffic. And it comes with a huge standard library of stuff just like Python, so you have a lot of like pre-written functionality tasks and a lot of stuff people use in their networks already. But it gives you a lot of flexibility, and that is also why it's not the classical IDS in the sense of it just looks for bad stuff. You tell it what you want it to look for. And then on top of that, you can build like all kinds of applications, intrusion detection, vulnerability management. You can get files. You can just try to understand your traffic if you want. So this is open source BSD license, so the most liberal license you can find. It's out there on GitHub. So what many people, even those who know Bro, don't necessarily realize is that it's been around for a while, more than 20 years by now. So Vern Paxson, the original author and inventor of the system, wrote the first line of code in 1995 already. And that was when he was still at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, which is a large research lab managed by the US Department of Energy. So they have lots of like physicists and do chemistry and supercomputer centers there. And a lot of like really a science-heavy institution. And they were monitoring the network, and they were looking for additional capabilities, and Vern started writing this. And you see, he actually published a paper at that time in 1998, and received the best paper award at USENIX Security. The interesting thing is then for a long time, at least from the outside perspective, not a lot of stuff happened. In 2006, we started trying to form a little bit of a Bro community, and the photo you see there is like, I don't know, 8 people sitting around the table. That was the Bro community, essentially, from the outside perspective. Our first Bro workshop at supercomputing in Tampa, Florida. Since then, there has been a huge shift. And what you see on the right-hand side, the photo is now we turned it into a conference. It's BroCon. Last year, we were at the Supercomputer Center in Austin, Texas, and we had 180 people there, all operators essentially, using the system on a daily basis, coming out and for 2.5 days wanting to learn more. So and some of my talk is really about what is going on here over time. If you look at what Bro is today, it's pretty exciting. Some people say it's kind of the best kept secret in security. So many people have not heard about this system, but if you go into the operations community, if you go to network operators, it's pretty well known at this point. And I just put out some numbers here to kind of convey the sense of what this originally very academic system has turned into. So we have a tremendous deployment base. Amazon, Facebook, General Electric, Mozilla, Salesforce, Target, they are all using it intensively. Department of Energy, Department of Defense in the US, the White House is being monitored using Bro. The 2012 Obama campaign was using it. Most of the national labs, actually probably most American universities are using it by now, lots of supercomputing facilities. If you go to like job posting boards. I did the search on monster.com just looking for people looking for Bro expertise. And you see these places, PepsiCo, Booth Allen Hamilton, looking for people with Bro expertise. You got a lot of industry funding recently, various awards, and the community has really been growing. So the question is, why has Bro become so popular? And that is an interesting story, I think. And one theme here is that what I said at the beginning, people are really kind of disappointed with security solutions they used to get in the past, in particular from commercial vendors. So if you look at how the typical commercial security product is being sold, it's being sold by creating fear, right? I mean, they tell you the world is so bad, you're under attack constantly, and only our box, which by the way, we're not really telling you what it's doing, but it will protect you, right? So, and then you buy it, you put it in, and you hope for the best. Turns out that most customers are not really happy with these black boxes because they are not standing up to their promises. So what people are really looking for is what I call the modern cybersecurity stack, which is something which is open, transparent, and it starts with being open sourced. Open source that means based on actual facts and an understanding of what's going on, based on science, and something which is really fueled by data. Like so much, there's this shift these days in so many areas to like big data and analytics, and people are really trying to dig into what is going on in complex systems. And I think we are seeing that in the network security world too. Let me go into more detail here and what that actually means. So what the number one feature that Bro gives you, independent of the scripting language and then of the flexibility, the number one feature it gives you the moment you start using it is visibility. So it creates logs of your network traffic in detail at the application layer, which people then can take and send into their often already existing analytics systems. So they already have their Splunk, they already have their Elk stack, their Kafka, their Hadoop systems, but they got large organizations. They have this in place, but what they need is high quality input to actually do analytics on top of that. And that is what Bro happens to provide very well, and that is what is driving this adoption rate. And to convey a bit of this flavor, what this means, I have a few examples here. So Bro starts by, at the very basic level, it gives you a summary of every connection which is on the wire in your network. And it does that, basically gives you these features for every single connection on the network. So the IP addresses, the protocol, the bytes, the understanding of the TCP level history of the stuff. It's a little bit like a better net flow at this very basic level. But even this is already very helpful. And it does much more, and I have more examples, but even this is very helpful to understand just basic patterns on your network. If you know what is the composition of your traffic mix, and I have a plot for that, kind of show an example of that, which is one of my favorite plots, even though it's pretty old at this time. At the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, they're keeping these logs since forever. Since 1994, they have these detailed logs available, and we plotted once this the number of connections the lab is seeing per month over the years. And you see this very particular pattern there. I mean, it's in principle, it's like an exponential growth, but you see this giant peak in there. And this is very apparent the moment you take this data and plot it. And of course, the obvious question is what happened during this peak? Does anybody have a guess what this large peak from 2003, 4, 5, 6-ish could have been? Maybe if I look a bit more into Bro's data, and tell you that most of these connections which formed this peak were actually just attempted connections. They were not completed. So if you look at the ones which actually succeeded, that's the blue line. That has the normal like growth pattern. The spike is the red ones, which somebody attempted but never completed. Turns out there was the era of the big internet worms, where like the code rats, I don't know if you guys heard about it, or maybe some of you remember it still, the code rats, the nimders, the slappers. So these first generation of worms, which was just indiscriminately contact tons of systems on the network, trying to find somebody's vulnerable and then spread themselves. And this timeline of worm outbreaks correlates directly with these little peaks in, with the little and the large peaks in this plot. So this is just the way where you suddenly, the moment you start plotting this data, you understand what's going on there. Bro also records HTTP traffic. So you for every HTTP session on the wire, you get, again, who's talking, but you also get the host in there, you get the URL, you get, I don't know, the username in this case. This was an example of a web service request. It looks at the content and figures out the MIME type. And with this kind of payload data, suddenly you're much beyond the level of net flow. Example for that is If you want to understand in your network, what are the top HTTP servers that your clients, your local users are talking to? If you just took NetFlow, all you have is IP addresses. And you could kind of do the reverse lookup on the IP addresses and what look up, okay, what are the top IPs, right? And what you get is something like this. This is the top, I think it's Berkeley traffic, Berkeley campus for a day. The top IP addresses about a year ago. Yeah, I think about a year ago. And you don't see pretty much anything there because it's all like content distribution networks, right? So just resolving IP addresses doesn't help you. If you take these bro HTTP logs, you have the host header in there. So you can actually tell which host people talk to. If you do the top 10 hosts, you suddenly see a lot more, right? I mean, you can see that people are talking to, I don't know, Google and New York Times and Twitter. So you get context, you get semantics of the traffic out of the payload, which you did not have just as the meta information level that that typical NetFlow gives you. Another log Bro produces is the software running in the network. So it gets out of various protocols what is the actual version of the software in use by that client. And this is an example of a Dropbox client. It even tells you the version, so which version this Dropbox client is using. You get that for all the software, all of your traffic. And then maybe you can do a little bit of crunching on, okay, so what is the top 10 software actually on my network? You can, this is, again, some random network, and you see the distribution of the browsers, essentially, because that's the main HTTP software in use. You see the Windows Update Agent. So suddenly you know, okay, this is what my users are using. If you're looking for a vulnerable software, so there's the newest exploit, you can kind of go back to these logs and look, okay, who's using that old version of the Dropbox client, for example? Bro can extract files, so out of SMB traffic, out of FTP traffic, email attachments, HTTP, for example, and it computes, it infers the MIME type, it computes hashes for the content, you can extract the files to disk if you want. So once you have the hashes, once you have a hash of every single file being transferred over your network, you can take that and go to registries of malware, for example. There's the Team Camry malware hash registry, where you can just do a DNS request with that hash, and they will tell you. They have a bunch of virus scanner running on their end, and a huge population of malware samples, and they will tell you if they've ever seen and flagged this binary with that hash before. So you can take these hashes. Bro can do that in real time as well. As the file flies over the network, it can compute the hash, ask the Team Camry malware hash registry if that is actually known malware, and flag it. And my last example is SSL traffic. Bro digs very deep into the SSL handshake. SSL is encrypted, of course, but the handshake turns out is clear. So you see, what are the certificates in use? What are the ciphers being used? Who is the one issuing the certificates? And that is a lot of context you get there as well. So in this case, there was a Netflix certificate. So you know what kind of traffic this is, even though it's encrypted, it's Netflix traffic. This, by the way, has kind of triggered a new research project on our end. We have, I think, about 8 sites currently, mostly large US universities running Bro at their border traffic for us on their SSL traffic. And they're getting all this SSL information out there, all the certificates, all the cipher information, and they're sending that back to us in real time. So we're putting that all in the big database. So we have created this ICSI certificate notary, which has been running for a bit more than 4 years now, and it has collecting 40 million certificates so far from 250 billion SSL sessions. So we have this very nice longitudinal data set of how the SSL landscape has changed over time. You're just seeing, for example, SSL, the new version 1.3, gaining traction. So you're kind of in live, in live perspective, seeing what's happening there. But kind of going back to this data Bro is producing, so all these log files, and there are a bunch more of these, but I hope I could convey a bit of the flavor of these logs. All this data, if you're an incident responder, if you're in charge of protecting your network, this is invaluable, right? So if you get compromised, you can suddenly go back to these logs if you've recorded them and understand exactly what has happened last week on your network. So in this typical question, okay, what has happened? How exactly did it happen? Is anybody else affected? So that maybe you saw it only like this one server was compromised, you have more servers compromised on your network. Has this happened before, maybe last year, and you just didn't notice? So once you have this data, you can just dig through And it doesn't matter if your IDS detected that in advance. I mean, you at least know that you know you have a problem, you can understand it. And this is really what drives these adoption, what is driving this adoption rate I showed earlier, the Amazons, the Facebooks using Bro because of this power. The interesting question here for me as an academic and like our research group, we have a very successful system now in operations, but how do we actually get there? I mean, this is I think there are some lessons there, and I said that at the beginning as my second theme. So how can one take research on the academic side and actually get it deployed out there, and how did this happen over a course of 20 years? And it's a long time. So, and for that I wanted to look a bit differently at the history. So earlier I showed this graph with the plots, not the plots, but with the photos of the Bro events. But if you look differently at these last 20 years, Bro really started out, as I said, at Berkeley Lab, and did not start out as a research system. So it started out because Vern was working on his unrelated thesis there, but also working with the network folks, and they wanted more visibility. So he started creating this system. And for a few years, it was developed like from that perspective, but in close collaboration with the operations team there. Over time, this kind of turned into more of a research platform. Wernbeck switched over to the International Computer Science Institute in Berkeley. A little bit later, there was about the time I joined the project there as well as another, a few other grad students. And in some sense, almost naturally, that developed research coming out of this tool, which was already in use. It had its problems. It was kind of a very homegrown system at that point. It was solving a problem for Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, but not really for other people. But it was a platform in use, and the ideas we had on the research side for how to advance network monitoring, we could put them to use into the system, because we knew that the moment we put in a new feature there, a new idea, these Lawrence Berkeley Lab folks would run it and would try it. So in this kind of over the course of the next, 10 years maybe, was really kind of an accelerator for the research side. So we got research grants in proposing new ideas, we developed them, we put them back into the system, Lawrence Berkeley Lab, and then over time a few other sites as well, mostly high performance computing sites like NCSA, for example, in Illinois, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, and a few others were using that. And in turn, they stimulated ideas for us for research. So there were new ideas coming out of these operators because they had challenges. The Bro didn't do certain things, or they wanted new capability. So it was, for example, not performant enough. And that is the one example I want to talk a bit more about, how this like feedback loop between research and operations can really help in the end both sides. So network traffic has grown a lot over time, and an IDS or any network monitor like Bro needs to process all these packets going over the wire in real time, right? So I brought another plot, which is an older one from my time when I was still a grad student in Munich. There we had a tap into the Munich Scientific Network, which is connecting the three major Munich universities to the public internet. It's a huge network, and they had what I thought at that time in 2005-ish. But I thought at the time was really a gigantic amount of data. And you saw it's kind of an exponential increase of the total bytes on that Munich scientific network link. The interesting thing is, so this is this plot goes until 2006, 2007. The next plot goes a few years later until 2030 and 40. And you see this point in 2005 is really like this low, almost hard to see point there, right? So the lesson here is network traffic is exponentially growing, and it's continuing like that. I mean, if I don't have the current numbers for Munich, but I'm sure it will just continue. So this is something an IDS, any network monitor, any passive system looking at traffic needs to deal with. I mean, you need to keep up with this huge increase in volume. That sounds like a research project. Indeed, so LBL, the Lawrence Berkeley Lab in 2006, they were actually not running. This is the standard Bro setting I showed at the beginning, right? You get the tab, you have a Bro instance looking at that tab. That's not what they were doing, because they had too much traffic already in 2006. they had a number of individual bros. They configured them separately. So they had one doing just these connection summaries, which I showed at the beginning, right? They had one doing just HTTP analysis. They had one just doing scan detection. And I don't know, they had this miscellaneous other bro doing all the rest. So they were manually splitting up the traffic and then configuring individual bros to just do a subset of the work, because a single machine would not be able to do it all. And that all as the traffic was further increasing. So they came to us they were looking for something more scalable. And what we ended up doing is we developed the concept of the bro cluster, as we call it, which is kind of the automated version of what they were doing already manually. And that is, we put a load balancer in, which takes the stream of 10 gig traffic coming in, distributes it out across individual bro boxes, so that each of them just gets a slice of the traffic. And the load balancer works by on a connection basis, so it makes sure that all the packets which are part of the same connection always end up on the same system, which is important for Bro to keep doing its protocol parsing. But then the key is, now you have split up the traffic across different systems in an almost random way. So you're not finding a scan, for example, anymore, which kind of goes across all these systems, right? Or the activity goes across. So you need to put communication in between these systems to correlate what each individually is seeing. That was by itself like, I think, two or three papers. How do you build this correlation? How do you put the communication in? How do you make it efficient? So in total, we came out with this bro cluster approach, which is a very scalable solution. And the nice thing is, can actually turn it to, take it a step further by not only distributing across systems, but because these days you have these many core systems, also each PC has itself lots of CPUs in there, so you can kind of do load balancing inside the system as well. So you get the traffic stream in, and then on the system you distribute in exactly the same way across different processes running on separate CPUs, and again you have them communicate, and then you have the systems again communicate as well. And that's a hugely scalable system, which goes these days easily into the 100 gig networks. So the interesting thing here is that we came up with this. We built the software side of that for the correlation of the communication. However, when LBL actually wanted to use that, they needed the load balancer. This thing didn't exist at that time. There was nothing which would take 10 gig in and distribute it by connection across 1 gig out links. For our paper, we did a Linux-based evaluation with that. So I think we used Qlik, which is a kernel level router, but that was only going until, I think, 2 gig at that point. So there was no 10 gig solution. LBL being LBL, they went out to a little company, networking company down in Silicon Valley called CPacket, and they actually contracted them to build it. So CPacket built this device they called CFlow, which did exactly what we had done on the research side, turned that into a product, and they started selling it. And it was LBL had its solution, and we had something out there which we could people point to. CPacket took this further. They integrated into future devices. Like, this is their 32-port version of the whole thing, where they could load balance in arbitrary ways between these ports, and it was really cool. Today, this is what is running at LBL. They are still running the Bro cluster. They're running it at 100 gig now. So this is the actual operational setup with two Arista switches sharing the task of the load balancing, because they're different separate uplinks coming in, and then distributing it out across all these bro hosts down there, using Miricom cards to do the one host dispatching to the various processes. It's exactly the same scheme, which scales, as I said, very nicely, fortunately, because of this two-level load balancing approach. They have a document up there, so if anybody's interested, where they in detail describe these setups. And now there are lots of other sites in the US science community actually replicating this setup, because they are facing similar challenges, again, in particular the HPC environments. So going back to my bro history part, so this is the kind of, we had a number of these projects where they were either, we had an idea, put it out, labs started using it, or the other way around. They had a challenge and we helped them solve it. And it was really fruitful for both sides. That got us until about 2010. So at that point, we are researchers at ICSI, the International Computer Science Institute. We were living off these NSF grants, right? So these NSF grants are research grants. So all we did, I mean, we did a lot of programming actually to make this all work, but there was never anything we were actually funded for. So we had always kind of had to sneak it in. At some point, that doesn't work anymore because like the engineering just kind of overwhelms the research if you really want to grow a system and grow the user community. So we reached this point where we had this powerful, stable, open source technology, really scalable thanks to the clustering, huge success on the academic side. I mean, the Verne's original paper is one of the most cited publications in the space. But at that point, really, nobody else even knew about Borg. I mean, if you mentioned it to anybody, nobody would know it outside of this small community. It was a very complex system to use still. And as I said, we're running out of the resources to actually maintain this now production-ready, I would say, software, but not quite there yet. So what happened is that the National Science Foundation did a step which we found was really exciting. It started funding us not for research, but for engineering. So it allowed us to actually hire engineers to put on Bro to improve the code base, to write documentation, and to most importantly get domain experts in. We were researchers, we have no idea about incident response. So we got incident responders in who actually overhauled the system from an operator's perspective. So they knew certain things were just not the way you need them on a daily basis. And it allowed us finally to also just focus on outreach and build the community you were seeing at on the BroCon photo earlier. So this really kind of kickstarted the transition to practice, as NFS likes to call it, of Bro as an operational product. And there was something separate at the same time happening, and that is this paradigm shift I was talking about, that people really were kind of fed up with their IDSs. Right? And they were looking for data to work from, to really understand their networks. And both of these things started at the same time. It was a lucky coincidence in the end. And that led to Bro deployments really skyrocket across the operators community. And I've now heard it several times from people saying that by now it's like everybody uses Bro. So I don't know, I talked to this CISO from some Boston area college not too long ago, and he has been like, he knew Bro for a long time, but he told me that he used to wonder, okay, is anybody else actually using this thing? And now he said he couldn't think of a single like educational institution in the Boston area anymore who was not using it. It's an amazing shift suddenly, which I think really NSF and this paradigm shift facilitated. That, however, turned into the next problem, because now suddenly you have a system out there which, I don't know, and Amazon is depending on, right? I mean, Amazon, actually, we had them at our BroCon last year. They're building racks of Bro systems. They put it into every cluster and into every data center. It's pretty amazing. And that is something, even with this NSF funding, as a research team, even with some engineers, you can't really support that anymore. Right? I mean, there's nothing which kind of matches this kind of demand we currently see from the corporate space. Well, you're located in the San Francisco Bay Area, the home of Silicon Valley, so that led to was that the trigger for creating a startup over there, kind of catering to this different community. So and it's really, and I like to tease this apart because they're really complete two very separate user communities for Bro. There's the what I kind of call the traditional Bro user community, and that is the science and higher education, the universities, the research labs, the supercomputer centers, and the people there, the operators there. There are these people who are really happy to experiment. They're fine downloading this open source software from somewhere, just trying it and seeing if it works for them. And that is often how Bro got into these institutions in the end. Some motivated individual just giving it a try. Suddenly that they had data and management got convinced the next time they saw a compromise because they could track it back now. So this is what this is the community our NSF funding caters to, right? I mean, this funding we got, both research, but more important, the engineering funding, is really for these people. We do kind of best effort support for them. So then there's the enterprises and government organizations. They are used to just buying stuff, and then they want to require a reliable point of contact. They don't really want that one individual on their team who is the only one who knows to run the system. So they want somebody to talk to if something doesn't work. And fortunately, they have a bit more flexible budgets as the typical university. So this is, as I said, basically led to an ICSI spin-off called CoreLite. And that's where I'm now spending most of my time these days as the CTO for this company. And we started bootstrapping, just providing support for these large environments who were running the open source version but just needed somebody to talk to. So they want, essentially they want insurance. I mean, the moment something breaks, they want a phone number they can call to help you. And this support we offered allowed us to develop actually an appliance, which is Bro in a Box, roughly speaking. We call it BroBox One. and the pitch is, Bro is a very complex system. We make it easy. By giving you this box in 10 minutes, you're up and running. So basically, you plug in your network on the one end, and this data stream, this is all we are focusing on right now. These data streams, these logs, coming out on the other end, feeding into your Splunk or into your Hadoop, into whatever you have. And this is getting a lot of attention. It's really interesting to people who know they want the data, who are not really interested in downloading an open source software and making sure it works correctly on their end. For me, I'm the researcher, I have the technical perspective. What's really interesting, or what has been really interesting here is it's suddenly a very different setting we have here, right? I mean, before we had an open source software, people download and run on any hardware they can find, from like the oldest PC, like they find on some shelves, to like stuff they just buy for this specific purpose. We don't control that. I mean, always hard to tell what kind of performance people are getting out of Bro running on whatever hardware they happen to have. So with the BroBox One, we had this interesting experience that suddenly we controlled the hardware, we controlled the whole stack, so we could kind of tune this thing from network card, we have a custom network card in there, over the kernel, the packet capturing interface to the software to the export of these logs. So we control the whole pipeline. Interestingly to us, even though conceptually the BroBox One is still like one of these clustered systems I showed earlier, like network card distributing packets over multiple processes, data coming out. We've been doing this for many years. It still took us a year to build BroBox One just to make it into this nice, seamless, user-friendly version and which performs at a level we were actually not able to get to before. So this was a very interesting technological challenge. And this, for the future, there's much more we can do with this kind of integration. So by controlling this box, we can integrate it much better into other things, even though Bro will stay open source. So I mean, there's no question about that. So this is all kind of stuff which happens in addition. Going back to my history slide, now we have the startup now down there as well. Started in 2013, I think, yeah. So what's really interesting is really this middle part. I mean, this... And at least from an academic perspective, from a researcher perspective, that's the key part, that this close interaction with these real environments helped so much of Bro develop and at the same time so much academic research to even happen, and then all these papers coming out to happen. And this is something we're continuing. And I guess I don't have a lot of time anymore. I have a few more examples of like ongoing projects we have which just keep the spirit, where we work with operations to develop new cool stuff on the research side with new research funding we are getting in from NSF and others. So I'll just go through this very quickly. So there's this one area we are specifically targeting, this enterprise environments. This notion of these large complex networks out there where in the past you were monitoring just your border network, but what it's your border gateway. But what's really interesting to people is what's happening internally. What is like my SMB server, my mail server, my LDAP server. So what is that guy seeing, doing, who is accessing it maybe, who shouldn't? So what people do is they start distributing Bros across their networks, and they want to have many, many instances essentially everywhere for comprehensive coverage. This is a very interesting research question. How do you make that happen? How do you kind of coordinate these? How do you have them communicate? How do you correlate across from different vantage points? And this whole notion of going from perimeter to internal, from a just standalone system to coordinated installations, also from passive to active, in the sense that often people want to take control if they see something. So if one of these Bros sees a malicious actor doing stuff. Ideally, it would tell all the others, and it would tell your network, the network hardware, your routers maybe, to block that guy at all the ingress points. So this is the kind of stuff we're working on, and there are various efforts along that way. As a technical tool, we're working on a new communication library to make this kind of distributed correlation information propagation happening, which is called Broker. And not going into detail yet, it's essentially a publish-subscribe C++ API, which is dedicated to this purpose of doing correlated, widely distributed network monitoring. The next thing where we have a prototype at the moment is, well, we're monitoring the network, but certain stuff you really get only from the host. It's a classic like network-based versus host-based IDS. There's an interesting twist, though, and that is that there are sensors these days which follow more this data angle, which Bro is doing as well. There's specifically OS Query coming out of Facebook. I don't know if you guys know that or heard about it. It's an open source library that you run as an agent on your systems, and you can ask queries about your system's activity. What are the users currently logged in? What are the current processes? Give me every time there's a new file on that system, please let me know. And it uses a SQL like query language for that. You can put in a SQL query essentially, and you get every time there's a new file, every time there's a new process, every time there's a login, this information gets pushed back to you. We have a Bro interface for that. So it's suddenly in Bro scripting language, which I haven't talked much about, but it's this, as I said in the beginning, it's a very flexible language to react to stuff you see. In the scripting language, we have now this host level activity exposed in exactly the same terms, so to speak, as network traffic. And we can start correlating the two. And I think there's a lot of potential for example, finding out on the network you see certain activity, what's the user behind that? That's kind of the holy grail for network administrators. They see a compromised system doing communication. They want to know what process is behind that, or who is the user who logged in, and that means that user's credentials were compromised. So they want to kind of connect the dots, that you need this host level information for that. Then there's the whole industrial control systems, IoT, Internet of Things angle, right? So that is like a pretty much from a network monitoring perspective, not a lot of stuff has happened there. And we have started some research projects where we look at like water treatment plants, or we have like one for building automation systems where we're trying to understand more the domain-specific semantics of these environments. So if in this example here, there's this water tank with a heater. So if, I don't know, if the temperature in that water tank gets too high, then you have a problem. That's the kind of stuff you see that on the network. If you follow the communication of these network devices, and if you're able to kind of tie what you see there back to the semantics of the process. And there's a lot of like potential, I think, there for research. But again, it needs to happen in close cooperation with the operators of these networks, because you need this domain-specific knowledge there. And then my last example is kind of almost the opposite. It's these high performance networks, supercomputer environments transferring huge amounts of data. There is no good security solution currently out there for a 100 gig network. So if you're I don't know, if the newest satellite photos of I don't know, of some, I don't know, for coverage covering the Earth, or what, you want to transfer these huge amounts of data around, you can't put a firewall into the network, because there's no firewall which can do 100 gig reliably without breaking the performance on your network. So Bro has been used in these environments for a long time, but what they would like to do is they would like these more domain-specific policies where Bro can turn into the firewall even though it's offline. So it starts talking to the network and for example, either closes stuff it doesn't like, just as a firewall would do, or maybe dynamically it whitelists an allowed data transfer. So if it knows there has be a correct authentication taking place by a user authenticated, authorized to do this huge transfer, it would poke a hole into the router's access control list just for that guy, just for half an hour. So this is the kind of stuff Bro can do because it's programmable. So people are working on that. So that pretty much concludes my talk. So this going back to this theme of the modern cybersecurity stack, it's really, I think there's a it's just a noticeable difference of how operators are approaching the security of their network these days. So they wanna see what's going on. They wanna know what mitigation to take and how mitigation works. So they don't want to do these black boxes anymore. And from like the academic research angle, I think there's a huge opportunity, because now we are working with data. Now we are working with like transparent solutions. We are working with open source. There's a huge potential for the research academic community to really get into the loop there, and make a real impact, and in turn help these operators and get stimulation back for their research, and create this feedback loop. Yeah, that concludes my talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robin. And the advantage of having a good crowd on the day between holidays is that I believe they're highly motivated, and they will also have very interesting questions.
Great.
For you. So we'll try to pass this cube around if it's on. So who's the first to come?
Oh.
Yeah, I was looking at students, but then, yeah, of course we motivate students. And if not, yes.
Roughly speaking, like everybody else. I mean, we do it as good as we can. We try to decode the encodings. But then at some point, I mean, the point is, for Bro, the signature is not the last step of the analysis approach, right? I mean, it's not that critical to find like this one byte sequence exactly matching what you've described. It's really about the activity. So in Bro, you often start piecing together like various steps of activity to form a chain. So you try to understand, okay, what exactly is happening on that system, for example. And you can do that either like automatically during monitoring as it happens, or you do it later in the log files because you have the same activity in there. You can kind of manually, like a detective, go through. So at that level, like these individual encodings, encoding problems and challenges are not that important anymore. Maybe you missed this one step in there. Or maybe in the log later you see, okay, actually I didn't decode that right. And then you maybe can still manually do it in the one case where you have to. But it's not, I mean, it doesn't make it easier, of course, to get something like that wrong or to miss something, but it's not as key as it is for Snorders or Ricarda, because there you, the moment the signature doesn't match, there's nothing else which would happen, right? And you just miss it. But it's a fundamental problem for any network monitoring, and I think maybe the one broader point there is, whatever you do when you look at packets, it's always heuristic, and you have to understand that. So you're always trying to make your best guess in terms of what's going on there. You can never be sure. Innovation. This one? Let me go to the second version of that. Yeah, this one. That one? Oh. Good question. So there is multiple points there. What was the first part of your question? You started out?
You said science, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The answer to that question is you should be doing something better than the commercial one, so not doing science. That's the exact
oh,
thing.
Yeah. Got it. But you started out by saying that, that you're surprised by that, that I see a gap between academia and operations. Yeah. So let me answer both. So the first one, if I conveyed that I'm surprised, I'm not surprised because I've been working like at the boundary of these two communities for such a long time. What I notice is a gap there. And the gap is very unfortunate on the research side that many people don't really talk to operations. And it works the other ways too. Operators are not talking to academia either. And I think it's crucial for any solution that is actually supposed to work in practice and do like innovative things to actually work at this boundary and have people talking. So that's the one thing I wanted to say. What the science? So, I mean, there's this whole discussion, what is science, right? And is computer science like systems work? Is systems work actually science? So, and I think the scientific part of that is not the programming. That's engineering. And yes, we are amateurs at doing that. But it's more, often for us, the science comes in the moment we have built this thing to make sure we understand what it does, to understand it performs as we expected, and really put it to test in operational environments. That is for us, the science actually is also running these systems in operations and making sure it works as promised and do the experiments. It's a very like experimental, empirical art of science. In turn, it also drives science then. You have a tool and it allows you to do measurement studies of stuff you were not able to do before. So it's both science to develop and evaluate like these approaches and in the systems. In the systems kind of science, right? And it's also an enabler for new understanding of what you're doing. For example, this SSL observatory. So we can do now like huge measurement studies of SSL traffic, right? And that is something which for me is clearly like very empirical network measurement science. Did that answer your point at all?
I think we move with the next. I take online questions in the meantime, and that's how can Bro help deep history detailed forensics investigation projects? So
can you say that again?
So could there be a connection between the forensics part and the analysis part that is done by Bro? So how does it comes back to the
so Bro evidence? If I get the question right, Bro is a tool which people often use for forensics. Because it provides you with this, or you run Bro and you get this data archive of stuff which happened. And that is essentially what you need for forensics. So you need something to understand exactly at the very detailed level what was going on.
So when you store the traffic, you will be able to do the forensics on it afterwards, or to store the evidences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then to Erik.
So first of all, Bro itself doesn't even have an interface to external systems. So what people often do is they build their interfaces themselves to whatever they have. If you ask me what people usually have and where they then build the interface, it's Splunk is the most common one by far right now. Everybody hates it because it's so super expensive. And everybody tries to find something different, but I don't think there's, like for the average operations department, there's no good alternative at the moment. So yes, if you ask me about the commercial product, there we have the external interfaces built in. So we have a Splunk exporter, we have a Kafka importer. We can just send TCP out, like raw TCP streams if you want. We can copy the files over, so there are various ways there. Okay, let me clarify. We have four 10 gig interfaces on the box. They are all merged transparently into a single stream, which will be analyzed.